Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tech Done Different. As always, I'm your host, Ted Harrington. And with me here today is my special guest, Adrian Crisson, the CTO of buyautoparts.com. Adrian, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Ted. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm glad to participate and share with your audience whatever this conversation takes us.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the reasons that I really wanted to have you come on the show was, of course, we know each other through a technology leader group called Seven CTOs. Shout out to the Seven CTO family out there. And what I really wanted to have you come join is talk about from the perspective of being a leader in technology. And we can just talk about the different tech issues, leadership issues, et cetera, that you might face. But where I wanted to start was with this idea of doing things differently. I mean, this show is Tech Done Different. And you and I were chatting earlier about the fact that even though we're both technologists, we're both operating obviously in technology fields, we both have an affinity for the analog and for writing handwritten notes. And you were starting to allude that you have maybe an interesting system around that. So tell me a little bit about why it is that you think a more analog method of note-taking, you know, physically a pen on a physical paper, why does that work for you?
Well, I think that there are several reasons for it. First of all, growing up in Romania, I've used fountain pens as my way of writing. And I tend to like the tactile feel of a nib on paper. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, and by the way, I'm collecting fountain pens as part of that, right? Because I have this, you know, thing about fountain pens for some reason. I don't know why. But I think I am a very visual person. And to me, I've tried different methodologies that were electronic format for taking notes and managing my tasks and so forth. And I've never found the same level of visual connection between what I type and remembering it that I am getting with actually doing things in an analog way. And so it became something that was ended up being my go-to for taking notes. And I actually created a system for myself, which, you know, may be interesting to others, that helps me not only keep track of the notes, but also understand how to deal with, you know, have I done it? Am I deferring it? And so forth. And so I can share it really quick. And this is in a standard journal notebook. I have a system, and maybe I need to take my background off so that way you can see it.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, Adrian's showing this really cool notebook that he's got going on with a...
So if you notice, everything is taken down as a note. But I also have a rectangle in front of any action item that I want to take and deal with. And in these action items, I'm actually writing down when it gets done. So if you notice, when I have it done, I say done, or it's in OneNote, or I've transcribed it, or in some cases deferred. And one of the challenges with that is, okay, on which page, and notice that every page is numbered, on which page do I have an action item that I have not done yet? Because that's the biggest problem, is I want to go figure out what are the action items that I want to deal with. While I have at the end of the notebook, I have a catalog system that basically shows me just the pages that have action items that are not done.
So I can quickly... What I'm seeing, it looks like maybe you hand wrote all the different page numbers throughout the book where you have an action item, and then you've gone through and you scratch them off as you finish them. So you visually see the completion. Correct. And then you also see what's remaining.
Correct.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And so for me, you know, like it says page 70. So because the pages are numbered, I can quickly go to page 70 in the book, in the notebook, and I have an action item that I haven't completed it on that page. Very quickly, very simply, I just now know that I need to go complete it. And because the pages are in chronological order, typically I know that the lower numbered pages have action items that are older than the newer pages. And so, and I tend to put action items only around things that are important, so I don't get into this, you know, urgent versus important conversation.
Right.
It helps me not only remember that I have action items, but also now I can track them and find them and potentially even take notes about how did I resolve that action item, or, you know, was it deferred, or is it done, or I don't care about it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So a few things jumped out to me as you were walking through your system there. And of course, people who are listening to this couldn't necessarily see the notebook, but the elements, there were a couple elements that really stood out that you don't even need to see the book to understand. But one was that this isn't just like chicken scratch handwriting in a book. There's actually a visual methodology. You have open boxes that indicate to you, hey, that requires action, and that and so that's the first part, is the visual element. And the second element is the part you were saying, where the actual tactile process of writing that down makes the note that you're taking, the action you're trying to do, be a little more, I guess, permanent or real for you. Is that a correct interpretation of the key parts of the system?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. And the fact that I have the cataloging at the back of the notebook, I think, is something that became very, very important to me, because as I take so many notes, I tend to just not remember on what page an action item exists. So the fact that now I can keep track of that is become a critical part of the whole system. And, you know, there are very many cases in which, for example, an action item becomes something that I need to go create a, you know, team foundation service, like a TFS backlog item. And I just write it down. I wrote, you know, TFS number 12345 in that box. Now that action item is complete because it is now in a system where my development team can deal with. And then I assign that to somebody, and then they go do, you know, prioritize it and then go do their work. But still, I had to remember that, oh, this is something that I want to go think about, or groom, or add to the backlog. And even things such as ideas that, you know, may or may not become patents at some point in time, but ideas that are, hey, what if we were to solve this problem a certain way, now become action items that then I can develop further later in, you know, in some form or fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty powerful stuff. And what I like about this part of the conversation that we're having here is thinking about like ideas for managing ideas. And that's what I think really any leader struggles with. And frankly, that's not even a leadership thing. That's, you know, anyone really at any level. But it's really cool to hear you sort of talk about the not finished. I mean, these things are always a journey, but you're on the much more mature end of figuring out that process. Like I think back to when, you know, I was first starting my career and trying to all the different ways to manage notes and manage to-do lists and all this stuff. And I still am like, is this the best way? Can I improve this? What for you was the sort of inflection point when you realized, oh, this system is going to work for me? How do you evaluate a system, I guess, is really the question.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, we as technologists, I think, tend to think in highly digital forms of solving problems. And, you know, we always look for how can I do this with technology? How can I do this by writing code or, you know, creating this new hardware that would solve the specific problem? And in my journey, as I was growing up as a technologist, I've realized, you know, not every problem needs to be solved through technology. And that was an aha moment. And I don't know that I can pinpoint a specific time frame in my career where that became an aha moment, but that took me from thinking very much about how do I write this cool code to solve this problem and how do I invent this new way that, you know, I can patent or whatever, into, wait a minute, innovation is not just about technology. Innovation is about solving a business problem that somebody has or some problem at some point in time in a way that is simple, is scalable, is sustainable. Some of those things may be simply as, you know, how about we change a process? And many times I found that if I take a step back from being a technologist into being ultimately a problem solver, it becomes a very different way of approaching things that are giving me the ability to actually focus on how to solve a particular problem in the fastest, simplest, cheapest, easiest way, instead of how do I solve it using technology? And that became very powerful to me. And as I am working in a, you know, small company, resource constrained, you know, financial challenges from time to time, skill constrained, it gives me now a different way and a different approach to getting things done without having to have this army of people that can just build things all the time.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you're framing this around constraints, of course, resource constraints, skill constraints, et cetera. Of course, you know, money constraints is, I'm sure, in there too. So you have to, of course, determine how to allocate those finite and limited resources when there are many different priorities or initiatives competing for those resources. How do you think about determining where to prioritize allocating those resources?
Well, at the end of the day, part of the prioritization process is understanding what are the business needs. And you have to find ways to balance the short-term tactical activities with the long-term business needs. And to do that, you need to start with what's the vision of the company or what's the vision of the specific set of projects and strategic intent, right? Once you understand where I want this company to be in the next, you know, year, at the end of the year, et cetera, then I can start backing up and saying, what do I need to accomplish in order for me to do that? So that's my strategic intent, and that's how I build my thought with respect to long-term goals for the company and solving the business problems for the company. Mm. But there is a tension between that and the tactical activities that are, you know, keeping the lights on. Oh, a power company just told me that I'm going to not have power to my building for 10 hours. Now what do I do? How do I deal with that? How do I approach the fact that my weekend is gone because now I have to shut everything down because I don't have a generator in my building, make sure that then everything comes back up the next morning in the right order. You know, that was one of those squirrels that happened that I did not have control over. And I have to balance those kinds of things with here's where I want to go. And then there is this medium-term priorities, which is, well, there is a new, CARB, for example, California Air Resource Board, introduced a new regulation that now we need to deal with as a auto parts company and, protect customers in California, for example, from buying parts that are not, part of this CARB compliance rule set that we have to deal with, right? So those are the kind of things that constantly happen. Well, at the end of the day, I, as a business leader, have to focus on this tension and make decisions. Some decisions I'm going to be wrong at. But you know what? That's okay. I iterate. I go figure out, okay, I was wrong in this decision. Go fix the problem and, keep going. Mm-hmm. Some being wrong is not a big deal. Some being wrong is a big deal. But there's just so much that we as people and as leaders can do and take on. And, the serenity prayer comes into focus sometimes, right? Give me the wisdom to know when I can control things. And what's the difference between things I can control and not? And so that's, part of the balancing act of being a business leader and a technical leader and just simply a human being.
Totally. It's interesting, this idea, and I love the way you described it, this tension. That's such a good word that summarizes this challenge. So let's talk about this tension between sort of the what's happening in the here and now versus the things that are happening in the future. And the other day you said this thing to me that I thought was so powerful. I wrote it down and I wanted to ask you about it and get your perspective on it. I mean, of course, I'm a security guy, so I'm super interested in security topics. But you said, you're talking about yourself as a CTO, and you said, I'm trying to win the battle today, but I don't even know what the battle will look like tomorrow. So my job today is to make sure that the battle I'm going to fight tomorrow, I'm more likely to win. So can you, first of all, did I get it right? I hope I wrote it down right. And if I did, or even if I didn't, can you explain what you meant by this?
Sure. So yes. And first of all, to answer your question, you did get it right. I think that the concept when I mentioned those words, the concept was around security actually and security posture of our company, for example. And reality of the matter is, as I grew up at Compaq Computer Corporation in Houston, I helped shape the future of compute platforms that we now live, right? And part of that, I learned that, first of all, that I think there is a very famous quote, and I don't remember who said it, that the best way to predict the future is to invent it. Well, the thing is that you can invent your future and your path, but the problem is there are thousands and people that are trying to block your path one way or the other. And part of the challenge that I, as a technologist, have is to make sure that I clear all those hurdles or prevent people from blocking my path. But the task overall is, at some point in time, insurmountable. So how do you deal with a massive problem is by trying to go solve the things that you can deal with, the things you can attack and you can action today, and start thinking about what are potential threat vectors tomorrow. And so what I do is I tend to look at making little improvements every single day in my approach. And it's not about, you know, what type of security do I need to put in place, for example, 2 years from now? You know what? I have no clue. I mean, who could have predicted things such as, you know, cryptocurrency, for example?
Right.
I mean, cryptocurrency, if you think about it, is very, very young in the technology spectrum. And yet it's now top of mind for basically everybody in this, you know, in the world, and millennials and young people are just going bananas over it, right? And that's something completely new that came out of, you know, nowhere, what, 5-10 years ago? I don't even know if it's that old, right? But the same is with security. Things, you know, things that were not threats 2 years ago are now major threats, right? So for me, I tend to take a very layered approach to problem solving. And I tend to take a very iterative approach to problem solving, including security. So I try to put layers, right, to where at the end of the day, I'm trying to make it increasingly difficult, right, to go through gates. The first gate is, you know, probably, you know, strong, but then once you get through that gate, now you have to go through another gate. And at some point in time, hopefully it's this game of attrition where I'm going to have so many gates in front of you that you're just going to get tired. Hopefully that will keep me ahead and buy me enough time to put more gates up and keep trying to stay ahead of the game. Now, I also research a lot. So I do a lot of reading on a daily basis. I look in the news, Wall Street Journal, and, you know, technology kind of information. But I also try to change the tools that I'm using, right? So go from one antivirus to behavioral antivirus, right? So signature based to behavioral approach and artificial intelligence or machine learning, or, you know, do I need to do that? Probably not if I just don't look at the future, but I think behavioral antivirus is adding to my threat posture, right? And so, yeah, I'm going to go make that change because it's a small change that hopefully will give me big benefits short term, immediately, as well as long term, because those companies that are focused on driving machine learning and figuring out how to solve these security problems are probably going to be next generation, and they're going to think about the next generation after that and so forth. And I need help, and I'm going to use the big brains at the companies such as, you know, VMware or CrowdStrike or whichever, you know, company you choose to have your endpoint protection, to give me that help, right? And hopefully that answers your question. It's what you're looking for.
It's a start. Yeah, it answered the first question I had, and now there's 57 more that I need to ask as a follow-up. There were a lot of really interesting insights and themes that came out of what you just said. A few of them, and I kind of want to break down into each of these, but a few of them were things like what the right mindset is, you know, getting better every day. You talked about how do we deal with change. You talked about defense in depth. So maybe let's start with the first one, this idea of, you mentioned you try to get a little bit better every day. And, you know, we talked earlier about handwriting notes. I'm scribbling furiously right now, like with a gazillion underlines, because I'm like, yes. I mean, I literally wrote about that in my book, that, you know, that's what security is, are we better today than we were yesterday? And will we be better tomorrow than we are today? And so you already agree with that perspective, which is awesome. Do you find that you run into challenges with others? Maybe I'm not asking you to call out people in your own organization, but do you find that mindset is one that is commonly shared or is not commonly shared in your experience?
Well, so if we are talking specifically about security, then you know, I have the opportunity to be at the top of the food chain in my organization with respect to technology, right? So that places me in a privileged place where I can, you know, hang myself with my own rope. So for lack of better terms. So I make the decision, right? And so from that perspective, I'm not getting a lot of challenges other than, okay, so now I need to go budget to purchase this specific tool or solution, right? But I make a business case and I just go do it. If you're asking about other types of activities that are, you know, how do we make the world a better place or the whole company a better place? How do we do that in an incremental way? Yes, there are challenges with that in general, right? Because people tend to work very differently. And the way I think about things tends to be against the grain sometimes. And I have to take people on my journey. So even though I may know where I want to go, and this is a learning that it took me a while earlier in my career, I would just get really, really frustrated with people not understanding. Like, I see the solution. I see where we need to be.
Right.
But why is it that I'm the only one seeing it? And I had to realize that this was part of my growth, that everybody thinks differently, and that's okay. That's actually part of the power of us as individuals coming together to solve a problem. Right? We all have different perspectives. So my job became not how do I, you know, smack you upside the head because, you know, you need to come to this specific point, but how do I guide you through my journey and learn from the things that you have to bring to the table that are missing in my repertoire, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, yeah, I may have some experience in doing technology and things of that nature, but I've learned that listening to people's perspective, even those that are not technology savvy, a lot of times bring back nuggets of data and information that I can use to very quickly create a different approach or a different solution to the problem than why I initially intended to build. And so what happens is this whole initial solution that I thought I was the smartest guy in the room and I could get everybody to be on board and take you there, turns out that I had to go and adjust and pivot to go in a very different direction because the data that I had and the way I was looking at it, while correct, was insufficient. And, you know, I was, you know, that was something that I had to learn. But overall, I think it has given me the ability to now build solutions that are inclusive. And I also get buy-in from those people that have to go live with those solutions, because they were part of the solution, not part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's organizational change and organizational development. And that has been something that I've learned through time. And one of the techniques that I use, for example, when there is disagreement, right? Because you always get those types of things, is to focus on what are the things that we agree on, right? So you have this massive problem that you're focusing on and everybody doesn't like it, doesn't agree with the solution. And what I've learned is that really what is happening is everybody disagrees with different pieces of the solution, not with the solution at the whole. Mm-hmm. But because they don't know how to articulate that, they said, this is bad. Great. Now let's go start focusing on from this big solution. What are the things that we all agree on? Do we agree that this is the way it is? Yeah. Okay, good. We don't have to talk about it anymore. Do we agree about this one? Yes, we don't have to talk about it anymore. And then you very quickly get to the nugget of disagreement. And then you can build a solution really specifically to that disagreement because everything else is resolved. And once you realize that, and once you do that, large disagreements and problems and taking people on your journey become very simple, because now you can now start discussing the things that are really important to the people. And it also shows that you listen. It also shows that you understand what they're saying, and it's not just blah, 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 blah. Yes, but here is how to solve the problem, right? And it becomes a very collaborative activity that people now have a buy-in.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up, I mean, that's such a great note, I think, for us to end on, this idea of how do you build consensus, especially around a major change, by listening and by involving people in the creation of the solution. So, and that's really amazing. I was nodding along, of course, taking many a handwritten note on what you said. Selfishly, I'm going to go implement a lot of your ideas. So thank you for having this one-on-one consult with me. Adrian, as we wrap up here, any last words or anything you want to leave our audience with?
Well, you know, first of all, thank you for having me on your show. It's been a great pleasure. And I like sharing. I like helping and coaching and doing things to leave the world and my company or whoever I talk to better than they were 10 minutes ago or 15 minutes ago. That's part of who I am. And I think it's a lot of fun. If somebody can take a little bit of knowledge out of this conversation, fantastic. If not, sorry for the 20 minutes of wasted time, but I'm hoping that that's not the case. And I hope we'll have a chance to talk soon again.
Well, I think people will definitely get value out of it. I did, and maybe I'm just my own barometer here, but I appreciate the insights. So Adrian, thank you for being on the show. And everybody else, if you want to learn more about Adrian, the show itself, or apply to appear as a guest, just go to tedharrington.com/podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.